for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. Every week, Steve will give us timely tips for caring for our plants. He'll answer your questions and give us expert advice. Now here's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.
Good morning. It's a walk through the garden with Steve Stone. How are we doing, Steve?
We're doing really good.
All right. So what do you have in store for us today?
Well, there's just a lot of different things going on this time of year. It's hard to believe that we're talking about fall. We're kind of halfway or better than halfway through summer, sneaking up on August, and the fairs are going to be starting. Well, I guess they've already started. Yeah. Jay County Fairs is fairs already over. But again, kind of sneaking through summer here really, really quickly. I wanted to just start the show this morning talking about some different things that I've noticed this week, and when you get into this time of year, there's certainly one thing that comes to mind is there's just a lot of different types of insects out there that are working on plants, kind of creating some problems potentially. One of the things I noticed this week is the red-headed pine sawfly, which the adult is a fly. It looks like a fly, kind of like a wasp. It has wings, but the larvae is what's causing damage at this point. And the insects are kind of a caterpillar looking insect at this point, kind of long and lean, and has a pale green color to it. It has a real kind of a bright orangish red. They call it a capsule, but kind of a head that's a really kind of bright orangey green. And those, according to their name, is definitely an insect, a larvae of an insect that's going to be certainly specifically on different varieties of pines, mostly or almost exclusively on hard-needled pines. So pines that would be in the you know, like the Mugo pine, red pine, jack pine, Scotch pine, those are all trees that will be infected. The white pine, occasionally, but rarely. And the white pines are the ones that have the real long, soft needles. So it's mostly something that's, again, going to attack the hard-needled pines. You'll notice, if you look very close, you'll notice on the trees, the needles themselves will have a kind of a polka-dotted kind of a look to them up and down the needles. You'll see these little tan brown spots in the needles, and they'll be maybe an eighth of an inch apart, and they'll be in a perfect line up and down the needles. That's actually the egg. The adult will lay an egg inside the needle, and the egg will mature, and then the larvae hatches out of that. And what you'll notice initially is when the insect is really small, it'll feed on the needle, but it actually just kind of slices the needle open and kind of takes the insides out. And so the needles will hang onto the tree. They turn brown and kind of curl up. Then as the first instar, second instar, third instar, as the insects get bigger and bigger, then they'll just at that point completely devour the needle, so the plant will be completely stripped. And when you have a decent colony or decent amount of them working on any given tree, you're definitely going to notice the frass underneath the plant tree, which is the excrement from the insect, and it looks kind of like a sawdust, kind of like orange sawdust underneath underneath the tree. But you can notice that. Again, you'll also notice usually you'll notice it on the tips of the branches, so it will start at the tips and work its way down, and you'll notice, you know, just simply stripped branches or bare branches. Certainly an insect that you want to get on top of as far as an insecticide application goes, to make sure you knock that population out. Otherwise, they really don't necessarily kill the plant, but it does become so misshapen, unsightly, and again, with all the big bare spots, you're definitely going to, it can definitely cause a lot of damage that makes the plant potentially worth removing, depending on how big it is. If you get it early enough, and you just have a few bare areas, the plant can heal itself. You'll eventually kind of get those bare spots to fill back in. But if you are kind of asleep at the wheel when you're mowing and you don't pay any attention and the insect gets ahead of you, it can, again, create some really long-term issues for the tree. Another couple of bugs I touched on last week that we definitely want to talk about again this week is the Japanese beetle and the European mass chafer. The Japanese beetle and the European mass chafer are relatively large insects. They look kind of like a beetle. They have a hard shell on their back, and they have wings, and so they can fly. They will, if you're out mowing or working on landscaping and stuff, and disturb them, they do have a tendency to kind of fly away, but they will, for whatever reason, it seems like they will head towards you and they'll land on you, which can cause people to kind of freak out. But it's not an insect that's going to bite you, sting you, or anything like that. But they do, you know, kind of have a kind of an ugly look to them, and most people will freak out when they land on
you. They creep you out.
They kind of creep you out. they're not going to hurt you, but they are, again, it seems like there's a pretty good population of them this year. Every year is a little bit different. I've seen years that it's like an invasion of locusts. It just seems like they are everywhere. Now, this year doesn't seem to be that bad, although I am seeing kind of a low to medium population, at least at my house. But the populations vary dramatically, even from town to town, county to county. For years and years, it seems like, for whatever reason, around the Portland golf course, all my clients around the Portland golf course and the Portland golf course itself just seem to be a haven. Every season, no matter what the population was like around other counties, it just seemed like the population was consistently high around the golf course. For whatever reason, again, this year I'm definitely seeing them. They're out and about. They're feeding and causing damage. But the population, again, I would say would be kind of low to medium this season. And that's not to say that it's not going to get worse, because it's not like they all hatch at once. They're going to hatch over a period of time, and so, you know, I guess they're not hatching. They're pupating into adults. So I don't want to get too technical with my don't want to get too technical with my insect talk here. But they are, again, I had mentioned last week, they will feed on nearly anything. They will feed on petals of flowers. At home, you know, I've got different varieties of roses. They'll eat the petals of the roses. They seem to really like the tropical hibiscus. They'll eat the flowers of the tropical hibiscus. They'll get into petunias. They get into a lot of different things, and they'll eat the petals, the flowers themselves. They'll also skeletonize the leaves. When they get into larger shade trees, they, again, for whatever reason, seem to really like linden trees. So any variety of linden, greenspire, silver, redmond, they seem to really be attracted to linden trees. And again, we'll skeletonize the leaves. They also seem to be gravitating towards, you know, plants that have purple foliage, like your plum bush, plum tree, crimson king maple. Those are all hosts that the insect will gravitate towards and cause skeletonization of the leaf. So it eats all the inner veinal tissue out of the leaf itself, and all you're left with is the veins. And so it kind of looks like a your grandma's doily laying on her coffee table. It just has a skeleton of a leaf. And again, with the right population, you know, they can, again, cause an awful lot of damage. Again, removing flowers and damaging foliage on all your hanging baskets, pots, and containers. I've got tons of them out at my house. Nikki went out the other day to the hardware store and bought traps. The traps you kind of hang up in and around your property or patio, and they have a pheromone in them that the insect thinks is a mate, and so it's attracted to the trap, and they go inside the trap, and then they croak. They can't get back out. So she put one of those up on the back patio, I don't know, on Wednesday, Thursday, maybe. And I went out and checked it last night. Absolutely amazed at how many Japanese beetles was inside that bag. We must be attracting them suckers from countywide. They must be coming, because I've seen them on the plants, but the amount that was in that bag, in that trap, over like a 24-hour period of time was just absolutely incredible. And she took the time and motivation to go out and get that and hang it, because it was bothering her, because she was seeing her plants damaged. So they are working. But I did read an article that said, don't use those. I didn't tell her that.
Yeah.
But there was an article that said, don't use those because they do emit a pheromone. The pheromone is, I don't know what you want to say, it's a perfume that gets the insects all fired up. So they're thinking they're going to find their life mate. The argument in the article I read was, when you put those out, you're attracting them in from like neighboring properties and all over. Oh. So it actually brings more in than actually what's on your property. But again, we'll leave that conversation for a different time. They are working.
It sounds to me like you're doing your neighbors a favor. I don't know why they
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We got one in the backyard, so we're attracting all of Dave Hall's bugs over to our place, and we're catching them. They're out there on the market. You can find them at local nursery garden centers. A lot of the hardware stores in their garden centers will have them. And, they do work. They will attract, collect, and keep those insects, so they're not going to be feeding on your plants. But like I had mentioned last week, they do damage feed on plants, and they'll, cause issues with your plants. But what you're really hoping to do, if you're killing, collecting, and killing the adults, is you're keeping them for mating and the females laying eggs, because the females will lay eggs in the turf in your lawn, and as they mature and hatch in the fall, later summer, early fall, those are the ones that turn into them ugly C-shaped grubs that'll be in the ground, and those are the ones that will, with the right population, just absolutely mow off all of your roots of your grass, and then your grass is going to start to die. And again, that's something that you're definitely looking at, reseeding type issues, if you have that type of damage. We talked last week about some different turf lawn disease issues, and in some cases those disease issues can heal themselves in the fall once you get cooler temperatures and consistent rainfall. But with the grubs, absolutely not the case. They're going to completely remove the root system of the turf, and you're definitely going to be dealing with huge bare spots that are going to have to be reseeded or overseeded. So that's the reason you chase the adults right now and try to minimize the population of them suckers, because if you reduce that population, then the opportunity for them to mate and lay eggs in your lawn and cause turf damage in the fall is going to be dramatically reduced. So
yep.
We need to take a break.
Yep.
And we'll be back.
The versatile Kubota B Series is a do-it-all tractor. Run powerful attachments that can be easily switched out. It features a hydrostatic transmission and is simple to maintain. The Kubota B Series. It makes the hard work look easy. Talk to your local Kubota dealer today to schedule a demo.
Your local Kubota dealer is Hall Brothers in Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Buying a new grill from a big warehouse is like trying to start your old grill. You can end up standing around by yourself and nothing happens. That's not what happens at Ace. Wengler Ace Hardware has an exclusive lineup of premium brands plus premium service from the people who know you best. We'll make sure you get the right grill, whether it's gas, wood pellet, or a flat top griddle. And better yet, we'll assemble and deliver it right to your patio. Don't forget, your newest grill is never far away, and neither is our help. That's why grilling starts at Ace. Stop by Wengler Ace Hardware in Fort Recovery, your grilling destination.
And
Need a better job where the benefits are great. A family-friendly company with competitive pay. Where people stop and greet me when they see my smiling face. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
Locations in Van Wert, Fort Recovery, St. Henry, Rossburg, and Coldwater. Start at $15.25 an hour for full-time production. Flexible options available too. To apply, visit CooperFarmsJobs.com. Cooper Farms, it's more than a workplace.
This Sunday's Summer Concert Series show has been canceled, but be sure to be there on August 1st for Infinity and Beyond, a Journey tribute band. Again, there will be no Summer Concert Series show this Sunday evening at Vantrees Park. Please pass the word. July's speaker in the Fort Recovery Museum Speaker Series will be Joe Beatty, originally of Dark County, who is a fifth-generation descendant of Ercures and Samuel Beatty, who both fought here in the 1791 Battle of the Wabash. He will be speaking about the implementation of the Northwest Ordinance of 1787 and how it affected Fort Recovery, and it will be held at the Nazarene Family Center this Sunday, July 25th at 3 p.m. The museum's monthly speaker series is always free of charge. Make your plans to get to this interesting presentation this coming Sunday, July 25th at 3 p.m. at the Nazarene Family Center.
We're back. Walk through the garden with Steve Stone. We were talking about bugs and insects and killing them. And
well, there's, again, this time of year, you're just going to see or potentially see a lot of different types of insect issues. Fall webworm is another insect that you're definitely going to see if you're paying attention. Fall webworm is actually a relatively easy insect to control. The fall webworms are the ones that will produce, and when I say this, I don't want you to be confused with bagworms. Bagworms are the ones that I talked about last week, and they kind of create a bag, so to speak, a cocoon that they carry around with them as they're feeding, and then in the fall, they'll knit that thing shut, and they overwinter in that. Well, actually, the female doesn't overwinter. She dies, but she's already mated, so she's full of eggs. The fall webworm is an insect that will create a large silk bag, and all the whole population kind of hangs out inside that. So as the population gets bigger and the insects get bigger, they'll make the bag bigger. And those are, you know, can be the size of a, they start off maybe the size of a softball, but when you finally kind of notice them and pay attention to them, they might be the size of a volleyball or the size of a basketball at the ends of branches. They tend to, again, kind of gravitate towards plants, trees, small trees, usually ornamentals that might be in like the cherry family. Or flowering crab apples. They seem to be really attracted to flowering crab apples, but you can find them in different varieties like maples and shade trees. As you see them, again, if they're relatively easy to get to, if it's a flowering crab apple or flowering cherry, it should be pretty easy to get to. Those you can just take a pair of pruners and clip the whole nest out and burn or, you know, destroy the nest, and you've gotten the whole population. So not necessary really to do an insecticide when you can just, they're dumb enough to kind of all stay in one spot. You can prune them out and burn them and get rid of them. If it's at the top of a tree or something, you can, you know, apply an insecticide, but just if you feel necessary, that's necessary. Otherwise, again, the amount of damage that can cause on a large shade tree or large flowering crab apple is usually the damage is relatively minor. But again, that's a fall webworm. And then also, mimosa webworm is another bug that you'll see. And those are, again, almost exclusively on different varieties of locust trees. And those insects will cause what is known as flagging on the ends of branches. And flagging is, you'll just see the tips of the branches will be dead. The insects, again, kind of get in the tips of the branches, knit the leaves together, not nearly as noticeable as the fall webworm nest, but will knit the leaves together with silk and cause those tips of those branches branches and that those leaves to die back. So again, a few of those in your tree, your locust tree, is not anything to get excited about. Again, as the population from season to season to season increases, it may get to the point where you may consider doing a an insecticide application. But with locust trees, again, they can be quite large in a lot of cases, so it can be, you know, expensive and have the need specialized equipment to get the tree saturated or sprayed properly to get the insect under control. Wanted to shift gears a little bit and kind of get away from the bugs and talk about some, you know, some really cool, pretty stuff. With the season that we've had so far, and they're calling for some warmer temperatures this week, with temperatures in the high 80s, low 90s, and higher heat indexes. So they're talking about temps feeling more like 95 to, I've heard as much as 98 degrees, which, you know, it's pretty typical, I guess you could say, for this time of year in Ohio. But we have had a relatively mild run of it so far. We're actually fairly dry through this area of Mercer County, Fort Recovery, St. Henry. I think has missed a lot of rain showers that have gone north. I know we're doing some projects up, even just north of State Route 29, and every time a black cloud rolls through, it seems like this one project we've been working on for a month, we're trying to get done, it just rains. And so, you know, yesterday, you know, north up around 29 and following 29 into Walpock, just got dumped on a tremendous amount of rain. And then you get south of Greenville, and they're having, you know, down through Tip, Troy, Dayton, Cincinnati, one of the more wetter seasons they've had in a long time. But point to this is it's been a relatively mild season as far as temperatures and rainfall, and so plants are just doing extremely well. If you know, I'm a big perennial flower guy. I love all the different types of perennial flowers, and I was just noticing, you know, yesterday as I got home from work, the purple cone flowers. I got a bunch of different cone flowers around my house, and cone flower is a native. It's a native Ohio plant. It's been in our prairies for hundreds and hundreds of years. You know, the cone flowers are blooming absolutely spectacular this year. They also do really well, and they play well with black-eyed Susan or Rebecca. And so the Rebecca, the black-eyed Susans are blooming right now, and there's a bunch of different varieties, hundreds of different varieties of daylilies. We've just had a good growing season that the plants seem to be pretty happy, and they've had enough rainfall that they're, you know, they're thriving. And so just to, you know, slow down and take a look at, you know, what's happening with the lawns and landscapes. Again, I was just absolutely amazed at how pretty all the perennials are flowering. There's, Nepeta, which is a cat mint, which is a really neat kind of spring summer flowering perennial. It's still blooming. Some of your salvias, or a lot of your salvias, are more like early season, early summer flowering, like late spring, early summer. I've had lots of questions about the different varieties of salvias. If you've got, you know, any of those varieties like May Night, East Friesland, and there's a million others I'm forgetting. If people love those because they bloom so nice in May, June, and by this time of year, they're spent or their blooms are past. And in some cases, depending on variety, the plants can get, the spent blooms can get heavy, and you get wind or rain and the plants kind of split open and they kind of start to lay down. And people aren't overly thrilled when they see that kind of a look. What they always seem to be missing is once those plants are completely done flowering, you want to trim them back by a third to potentially a half, and at least take all the spent blooms off. Because if you trim them down, take the spent blooms off, they're going to stay a lot tighter and fuller and look nicer. Then also, you're going to get some sporadic blooming in the fall. That's not going to bloom consistently like it did in the spring, but it's going to definitely give you some flowers in the fall that are going to, you know, kind of brighten up your landscape. So deadheading those is certainly not necessary, but it certainly will make the plant healthier and nicer looking, and then again potentially give you some nice color in the fall. So there's a lot of plants that will benefit, perennials that will benefit from deadheading. I'd mentioned the salvias, daylilies. Once those things are done flowering, the stalks are done, you know, trim them down, because those flower stalks are, the flower is the reproductive part of the of any plant, and especially like on a daylily, once that thing's done blooming, it's the flower's probably been pollinated, and you'll see at the top of that, once the petals fall off, you'll see a big seed head up at the top of that plant, and it can get as big around as, I don't know, they might kind of look like a real tiny cucumber, but it is the seed pod or the seed head of that plant. If you go in and trim all those out, it actually, again, makes the plant a little bit healthier and more vigorous, because the plant's putting energy into producing those seed heads, and you really don't, most people don't care because they're not harvesting the seeds to grow new daylilies. So you want to trim them off and dispose of them, and then that way the plant isn't erroneously putting, you know, energy into those seed pods when it can be putting energy into root development, new growth, and obviously new flowers. And so deadheading is very helpful for a lot of different types of perennials. I've gone through and cut my salvias back. Hopefully get around to my Shasta daisies or past blooming at this point. So this is maybe Sunday I'm going to get to doing a little bit of landscape cleanup and pruning and trimming and deadheading the Shasta daisies and some of the other spring flowering perennials that have come and gone. Now's the time to do that. And then also another really awesome plant for summer fall is the hardy hibiscus. The hardy hibiscus, some people call them a saucer plate hibiscus. They can have flowers as big around as a saucer, so whatever size that is, maybe 10 inches, and there's lots of different colors in the pinks and reds, whites. Those again are a perennial flower. They'll literally grow, you know, 6 to 7 foot in a season, and have hundreds of blooms on them. But in the wintertime, those will die down all the way to the ground. So you trim those big heavy stalks off, and then they'll come right back again in the spring. So those are the hardy hibiscus. And again,
I've had over the years, I've had a couple of hardy hibiscus, but they died off when we had really cold winters.
I've got one kind of in the front of my house towards the north side, and that thing's been in, I don't know, 15 years, and every year I think it's not going to come back. And even this year, I was 100% certain that it wasn't going to come back, because I swear it was, it had to be late May, early June, and I saw nothing. And I'm like, well, it finally crossed the rainbow bridge. But then I was just out pulling weeds a couple nights ago, and it's up out of the ground 2 foot and has, you know, four blooms on it. Right. And so they are a plant that definitely will die down in the wintertime and are late to come back in the spring. But I guess my thoughts on that is, don't pull the plug on it, because it's amazing that things come back every year. Now, the last couple seasons, it's definitely not bloomed. It's not gotten as tall and bloomed as beautiful as it has in the past. And this season is going to be kind of not that great, because it's only about 2 foot tall. And in the past, the thing's been 6 foot tall. But it does make it through the winter. And again, you know, maybe a little bit more of a protected site would be helpful. Like an east exposure is going to be better than like a west exposure if you're out in the country, because like I am, because I've got kind of a little bit of an open field behind me, so the winter exposure is worse on a west, and the west setting sun's a little, I mean, obviously hotter. So an east exposure is always going to be your easiest for your plants, because they get kind of protected. They get protected from that cold winter wind, and they also get protected as the sun's setting from that real hot, baking, drying sun in the late, you know, late in the days during the summer. So But, I mean, overall, like I said, there's probably not a plant that's any more showy as far as what their flowers look like in the fall late summer fall, because their flowers are absolutely enormous.
Yeah. And this one did come back a year or two, and then one year when it was really, really cold, it froze almost all of my roses.
Yeah.
Froze that. It's so cold for so long.
They're definitely susceptible to really cold winters. It's a plant that would certainly benefit from, you know, late season fall mulching to give it kind of a blanket in the late season to, you know, help the root system stay a little warmer over the wintertime. We need to get to a break and we'll be back.
It's time to begin planning your landscape improvements for this summer. Nature's Green Nursery can design a beautiful, cost-effective, no-maintenance landscape for your home or business with quality trees, shrubs, perennials, soils, and mulch. Steve Stone has a degree in horticulture landscape. Call Nature's Green at 419-375-2322 today and set up a free landscape design and evaluation. Check out Nature's Green on the web or like them on Facebook. Nature's Green Nursery on State Route 119 just east of Fort Recovery, Ohio.
Proudly serving the Fort Recovery area for over 23 years, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has the expertise to handle any dirt work you need. From installing waterways and building pads to demolition work and septic system installation, Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage has all the equipment you need to get the job done right. Does your driveway need some fresh gravel, or do you need some dirt hauled in? We can take care of all your hauling needs as well. Give Brian a call at 419-852-6655. Fort Camp Excavating and Farm Drainage. Go Indians.
If you like to grill out, Wayne Street Market is your go-to place for everything you need. Stock up now during their No Limit Meat Sale with great prices on their well-trimmed steaks. Ribeyes are $9.99 a pound. New York strips, T-bones, and flat iron steaks are just $8.99 a pound. And ground chuck is $3.59 a pound, loose or patties. And don't forget the brats. Choose from Carando, Johnsonville, and Swaggerty. And if you like to cook breakfast on your Blackstone griddle, be sure to pick up some eggs, potatoes, onions, and peppers, and their IPC bacon is just $4.49 a pound in their grab-and-go meat section. Get everything you need during their No Limit Meat Sale at Wayne Street Market, the best meat market around.
The 2021 Win on Wabash will be held August 27th and 28th at Ambassador Park in Fort Recovery. In addition to the $750,000 of cash and prizes that we will be giving away in the Tow and Go and Main Super Raffle, there will be side raffles, daily 50-50 drawings, stage games, mechanical bull riding, mobile axe throwing, vendors, food, drinks, and top-notch entertainment, including our Friday headlining band, Ladder, and our Saturday headliner, Nashville recording artist Adam Warner. Check us out on the web at wowraffle.com and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for all the latest updates and information. We can't wait to party with all of you at the Win on Wabash August 27th and 28th.
Welcome back. We're on our little walk through the garden this morning with Steve Stone. So we've talked about some insects. We've talked about some hibiscus. We've talked about some stuff. So are we continuing on some of that, or are we going to do something new?
No, we're going to wrap up here. I got to get to be to work by 8 o'clock. So, again, the time of year that it is, being July, I mean, a lot of people are, you know, gearing, you know, towards, you know, fall and football and stuff like that. But it's still a good time, you know, to plant. If you, you know, do some consistent watering, it's perfectly fine. If you want to do add some perennials, add trees, shrubs, flowers, whatever, it's certainly not a problem to transplant or to plant new plants if they're coming out of a, you know, container and the root systems are completely intact. You're going to be able to move those plants, get them installed, and have good luck with them, even with, you know, warmer temperatures. As long as you keep them watered, they're going to be perfectly happy. And root in relatively quickly. The advantage you have right now is the soil temperatures are really, really warm. So if you, again, give the plant ample water, it's going to, grab a hold very quickly. It's going to put a lot of new roots out and, again, get established relatively quickly. People always ask, this time of year, how much am I supposed to be watering? And it's like, well, plants are all different. What I could always say is if you're watering your lawn needs at least an inch of precipitation a week. And so if you're, sprinkling, if you've got sprinklers out and you're watering, set a garden hose up and run your sprinkler, and then also put a rain gauge out there where the sprinkler is going to be hitting the rain gauge. And then, just kind of remember or make a mental note of how long, it takes for your sprinkler with your water pressure and your size of hose you're using. There's no set rule because everything's different. Even around town, water pressure can be different from one end of town to the other. So you just need to kind of figure out how long it takes that area, that sprinkler, to put down, say, half an inch of precipitation. It's probably going to be maybe 20 minutes to 40 minutes. And then, again, kind of make a mental note. Well, it's going to take me, 30 minutes to put down a half an inch. And it doesn't take a super high intelligent person with math to figure that that's probably, if it's a half hour, it's going to take an hour to put down an inch of precipitation a week. And then you can, manage your turf that way. Landscaping is a lot different because certain plants like evergreens don't necessarily need as much water or appreciate as much water as something that's deciduous. So your deciduous plants, the leafy plants, so I usually kind of use spireas on a new landscaping. I kind of use spireas as my gauge because spireas, especially when they're newly transplanted, can be really fussy about water. So if they're looking droopy and curled up, then it tells you obviously they need watered, and if they need watered, probably everything else needs watered. But again, as you're planting new plants, yes, it's going to take some care out of the gate, and you may have to water three or four nights a week to get them established. But as the plants get established, it's not like you're watering every night. You're going to get to the point where you could probably want water maybe about once a week after they've been in for a week or two. It just, obviously, the amount of effort that it takes goes down dramatically after they kind of get established. And then once a landscape's been in for a season or two, unless you have something that's really fussy, you shouldn't have to do an awful lot of watering up around the house as far as with landscaping. Now, with your annuals, that's a little bit different. You can consistently water those and fertilize those and push, good new growth. But a well-designed landscaping after it's been in with good hardy plants, once it's been in for a season or two, unless we would run into a really significant drought, probably is not going to need watered. I've had people, a lot of times I say kill plants with kindness in that, you plant some trees or plant something for somebody and they're out there literally watering 10 gallons or 20 gallons every night, and then they say when plants are overwatered, they start to have wilty leaves. And so if you don't know what you're doing, you see the leaves kind of wilting and you're like, oh my goodness, I'm not watering enough. And so you go out there and dump more and more and more until you actually kill the plant, and then you call me and say, my plant's dead, it died, I don't know what happened. And then I go out and replace it, pull the plant out, and the water is a foot deep in the bottom of the hole. That's when we say you kind of killed the plant with kindness. You kind of overdid it. Our heavy clay can be can hold water. I mean, if it can hold water to the point where it doesn't percolate through fast enough. So if you're watering too much, you can't actually drown the plant. So I got to get to work. I hope that was helpful. I'm happy to do this every Saturday again. Thanks for tuning in. And if you've got some questions or topics, please let me know or let Neil know.
Yep. We'll be back next week with A Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone.
Thanks for joining us again this week for A Walk Through the Garden with Steve Stone. If you have have a gardening question you'd like Steve to answer, just email him at steve@naturesgreennursery.com and he'll answer it on a later show. Be sure to join us again next week for a walk through the garden with Steve Stone.